This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. It is wonderful to have you out there with us this evening. And I am what I would refer to on my Jack Jones today. I did a bit of a muck up on this evening and nobody was available. So the good news is I have got a wonderful interview that I did with one of the women in the fellowship. So I'm looking forward to playing that for you. But first of all, wonderful to have you out there and thank you very much for joining us. I wanted to talk a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you may already be aware of this, but it's a service. It's a fellowship of alcoholics helping other alcoholics in recovery. We do the mahi together through a 12-step program, and we're there to support each other and live life on life's terms. It's a good explanation for it. I am going to, what am I going to do? I tell you, there's lots happening in here tonight. We've got, Tanya's story, so do listen for that. Very interesting. She's had many a year sobriety up her sleeve, and she gets very honest with us, which I really appreciated. And there will be a bit of rain you're going to hear, because we sat in my car after a meeting and recorded it. So you may hear the pitter-patter of rain on the roof. It was a very, very wet day that day. We're also going to talk a little bit tonight about different things in sobriety, discovering, are you needing Alcoholics Anonymous? Is this something that you think in your drinking needs to take you down to? It's all good fun. Right, I am going to start this evening with the preamble, and I just need to get that in front of me. And until I do, I'm going to read for you today's daily reflection. It's a good one. It's called, the daily reflection comes out of a little book that we read in a meeting. There's a little reading for each day, just to make us ponder and think about where we're at. And this one is called Toward Emotional Freedom. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. That's from our 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 80. It's our book. Willingness is a peculiar thing for me in that over a period of time, it seems to come first with awareness, but then with a feeling of discomfort, making me want to take some action. As I reflected on taking the eighth step, my willingness to make amends to others came as a desire for forgiveness of others and myself. I felt forgiveness toward others after I became aware of my part in the difficulties of relationships. I wanted to feel the peace and serenity described in the promises. From working the first seven steps, I became aware of whom I had harmed and that I had been my own worst enemy. In order to restore my relationships with my fellow human beings, I knew I would have to change. I wanted to learn to live in harmony with myself and others so that I could also live in emotional freedom. The beginning of the end to my isolation from my fellows and from God, came when I wrote my eighth step list. Now, I did actually read that earlier on in the day, and I have to say my emotional freedom has really been a gift. I've got this just purely from working the program. I can relate now, I can think of, I can take into consideration the effects of my actions to others on a daily basis. I came into this program confused with life. I was angry, resentful, unhappy. Gosh, I was so unhappy. I thought I was going mad. I just couldn't stop drinking. I was full of hurt and pain. I had no self-esteem. I was really lonely, really alone. It's such an isolating disease, this alcoholism. But today, I have to say, I have emotional freedom to relate to what's happening around me. I have community. I've got family, friends, love in my life. I've got work. I give my time to others. I work on me. I work on my sobriety. I'm not angry. I'm definitely not resentful, not alone, not lonely. I have value. I did come into these rooms not feeling any value, but I've actually started to really like who I am. This has all come through the hard work of doing the steps, the 12-step program, and saying that, yes, it's hard, and saying the other side of it is so rewarding, so rewarding. Looking at yourself, having forgiveness for others, taking ownership of my behaviours towards others. Through all of this, I've got emotional freedom these days. I'm not carrying all of that today, all that nasty, heavy, horrible stuff. Got to say, this is a simple program for very complicated people. And if you work at it, it certainly helps. It really does work. I'm quite impressed by it. I'm amazed by it. People have heard me many a time say, I think it is a bit of a miracle. It really is. Now, you are listening to the AA Live Show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. Now, I am going to put some music on. My son has picked the music today. I hope you enjoy it. First up, we've got one of his favourite bands, which is Imagine Dragons. And let's get into that. It's a pretty good song. I could do this with my eyes closed.
I'm back from the dead, from the back of my head. Been gone and facing horrors that should never be said. The wrath and the grit from the pit of despair. Been taking every whip and word, I've never been spared. They say tomorrow's never promised, honest. They say the angels are among us. Lock me up in the maze.
Lock me up in the maze. Turn out the lights.
Oh, I do love that. I do love a bit of the Imagine Dragons myself. That's from their new album, Loom. It's been played many, many a time in our car this week. Okay, we're going to move on to our interview with Tanya. It was a very rainy day. Okay, so heads up. As I said, you may hear the pitter-patter. We sat in my car, we talked about her story of alcoholism, her recovery. We had a good old girls chat, actually, which I'm going to play for you now. But I do need to give you a little warning. There are a few triggers in there. There's some family harm and some sexual abuse. So please do be aware of that. So enjoy this story.
I'm Tanya and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is the 18th of the 8th. Of 1998.
Oh my gosh, yours is coming up shortly.
Yes, 26 years next month. And in saying that, it doesn't matter how long you've been in AA, you know. And I think for me, the more I'm sober, the more I need AA. And so.
Do you find that because more challenges are coming up in life, or just you understand it's help?
It's probably more help,
how it works. Okay, well, tell us a bit from you.
Well, I was brought up in an alcoholic family. Both sides of my parents, my mother's family, the boys, they were all alcoholics, and my dad was an alcoholic, and his brothers were alcoholics. And then, of course, I came along. I was the youngest of three children, the only daughter, the little princess. And but anyway, yes, lots of alcohol parties in my family, and also lots of violence. You know, my dad was very violent towards my my mum, and he was always out playing the field. Here in Dunedin, he was brought up, and he was actually known as Knuckles around Dunedin.
Right, and so the violence, did that happen from after he'd been drinking?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And there was, when he was sober, but not as much as when he had been drinking. And as I said, he was known as Knuckles around Dunedin, and he'd walk in the pubs and he's Knuckles, you know. And I think it's when you get into sobriety yourself that you can look back and think, you know, the man had problems and had his own stuff going on through his, you know, growing up. And you know, there was lots of he cheated on my mum a lot, and right from when they were married, probably not anyway. There was lots of alcohol. It was always alcohol. And I, for myself, grew up feeling I was an insecure girl, and didn't always feel like I fitted in with my family or my peers, and always the odd one out, you know, and always full of anxiety and fear, and but didn't know what the fear or the anxiety was.
I always find that interesting in the rooms. I hear that, and I have exactly the same experience, that I didn't feel like I fitted in and so forth. It's not till I am in my adult years that I understand that those feelings were anxiety and fear. You
Absolutely.
Know, when you're young, you just feel out of place. You don't actually have a name for it.
There was no name for it, especially back in those days. You know, that was the 60s and the 70s, and you don't, and there was also, there was abuse, you know. I was sexually abused as well, not direct family members, but outside people. And when I was 10, I was raped by someone, and it's interesting, you know, I think we talked about it before, Jan, you know, any attention's better than no attention. And
I'm the same as you. My first experience was rape, and thinking if I put out then I'll be accepted,
yeah,
because that's what the first person wanted from me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it changed the whole way that I saw any sort of sexual relationship.
Absolutely. And and even that person that who was a cousin of mine that did that, you know, even after that happened, you know, I would look up to that person. You know, I wanted him to be part of me. You know, I loved him. I loved him. I loved him. And, you know, it's crazy, crazy stuff. And but as a little girl, being brought up in a crazy house with crazy people, yeah, any attention's better than no attention. And so I suppose when I started drinking at 12, I think I was, or whatever. I remember my father, actually, he got sick of me pinching his cigarettes when I was 11, so he bought me a packet of Pall Mall Filter once a week, and that had to last me at 11 years old, you know, and it's...
I remember going to Australia with my parents at 15 and buying my own carton through duty free.
Yeah.
Because it was easier if they just let me do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think they just got sick of fighting me, you know. I was out of control. I remember my mother must have said to my father when I was 9, the girl needs a psychiatrist, and I probably bloody did. But it's like... you know, but yeah, looking at the bigger picture,
well, she would have been seeing the anxiety and the fear, but of course we talk about it
a lot. But she had it as well.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot in society now, but back then, not at all.
The carpet. You don't talk about the teacher that's abusing you. You don't, what happened as well, and you don't go back and tell your parents those things. You know, the teachers and the whatevers, they were the boss. And so when I started actually drinking when I was 12, you know, it was that, oh gosh, I think I shared in a meeting today that it was my first drink was Gimlet and Screwdriver. I can still see them. It was like syrup and I power chucked, and but that feeling it gave me was that warmth, and that all that anxiety and all that panic and fear went away. So this was the magic, you know.
And, was the magic elixir. I had the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Oh my gosh, I can stand in this world right now and not feel that. Oh, I could it was be. Crushing. I could just be. Yeah.
Anything in anybody, and I was, and I sort of got around with an older group of people, and who. Yeah, they looked after me, but they probably also abused me as well, you know. But any attention's better than no attention. And I just drank all the time, and I was out of control. I was expelled from my two high schools and from drinking and smoking in the classroom, and just defiant, you know. I just didn't care. And again, any attention's better than no attention. And you know, excuse me, I had my first child at 16, and handed her to my mother to look after. I couldn't do it. It was like a child having a child. And my mother, you know, she took over her and loved her, absolutely loved her. And I loved her too. I just couldn't take care of her because I had to drink. And I wasn't letting a baby get in the way. And
well, and you didn't love yourself either, did you?
No.
Without understanding that.
No, that's dead right. And it took, and still, I you know, even after 25 years sobriety, I still struggle with those things, you know, loving myself. And I accept myself, but, you know, I still struggle with those sorts of things. And anyway, it was very early on in my drinking that I, it was pretty much straight out blackout drinking, and, you know, I don't remember, and, you know, a young teenager waking up where she shouldn't wake up with, who she shouldn't wake up with, and that happened time and time again, and I didn't think anything was wrong with that, you know, it was just part of my life. And once again, any attention's better than no attention, whether it be sex or anything. And I craved it. I craved it like I craved the alcohol. And the two went together. And I had my second son when I was 20. And my first son, I should say. I had my daughter. I had my first son at 20. And different father. I drank through those pregnancies, to be honest. I still drank. And
But back then, it wasn't the taboo it is today. Absolutely. And they didn't know what they know today.
Absolutely. It was sort of it was like smoking tobacco. It was an accepted sort of part of life. It's not like today that it's really frowned on. And of course, I wouldn't do it today, you know. Gosh, no. But back then, you did.
New Zealand society was based on drinking and smoking. Yeah, I remember walking past the pubs for the 6 o'clock swill, you know, they're closing. And the places would be chocker. Getting it in before they had to go home.
Absolutely. And my dad was the same, you know. And oh, goodness, yes. And the part, of course, that's when the parties at home really revved up, you know. But I had my second son at 20 and, you know, I sort of dragged him up. But the alcohol was always coming first in my life, you know. I loved my children. I loved them. But I was addicted to that alcohol. And I knew, you know, even in my teens that I had a drinking problem. But it was the only thing that took away the fear and the anxiety and the panic that I felt when I wasn't drinking. And, you know, I lived in a country place, and I shared also today that at the meeting that, you know, I'd been knocking on the doctor's door at 1 o'clock in the morning, please give me something to make me sleep, take away this panic, you know. They all knew I had an alcohol problem, but no one said anything. No one sort of pointed it out to me. And even if they did, I would probably say, you know, nah, you know, I didn't care. And as long as I had that booze. So I had my first son at 20, and I kept him with me, much to my mum's disgust. I think that she wanted to take him on as well. But defiant, I wasn't letting her have another child of mine. It's my child, you know, even though I'd given her the other one because I drank too much and still was drinking too much. And wetting the bed, I think I mentioned that, wetting myself, pooing myself, you know, and all those things and disappearing for days. I'd drop him off at mum's and disappear for days and come back and it was just the silent treatment because it was going to happen again, you know. And I moved from Dunedin to Nelson when I was 22 and chased a man, you know.
As we do.
There was always a man in my life. And interesting enough, there was always violence in my life, you know. It was like these men that I gravitated to, or they to me, were like my father.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Nelson and moved to a little place called Tapawera, which is just outside of Nelson, which is a forestry village. And they like their drink. So I fitted in really, really well.
Perfect place.
Keg every night, casks of wine and lots of violence. It was just the ticket. And it was crazy living. I was in a relationship, but there was men on the side. Just crazy, crazy living. And I shared today, you know, nothing got paid, you know. I cheated, I lied, I stole, and I stole off friends. And friends would know that I've done these things and I would deny it. And cross my heart, hope to die, I didn't do it, knowing I did it, they knowing I did it. It was just chaos and disappearing for days on end and... you know, sleeping with people it was just chaotic living and
no value in yourself.
No value in myself and
it's fascinating how we put value on our children, but we never put value on ourselves and so our children always miss out.
That's right. It's like, and I thought in my crazy mind that my kids were fine, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought my kids are all right, and I didn't realise that the damage I was causing them. I didn't get it, and I think I shared today, I still, even after all this time, share a bit of that mother guilt, you know. It still rears its ugly head a few times, you know, and I have to pray and be accepting of it, you know. I cannot change the past, and I can't, and I can only... work on the future. Well, when I was I got into recovery when I was 34 in Nelson, and I'd like to share that story because for me, it's my son is part of my recovery story, but also the power of prayer, the power of our higher power. And when I was 34 and my son was 14, and he had says to me, you know, I was rotten drunk, but I do remember I was lying on the concrete outside my house this particular day, and he says to me, "Mum, if you don't stop your drinking, I'm beep out of here." And I continued drinking that night, but the next day, I can't remember that I got my boys to school. I had two other boy by that stage. He was 7. And I remember sitting on my couch. I don't know if the kids got to school or not, but I remember sitting on my couch saying out loud to whatever was going to listen, I don't know, at the time, and I just said, "I cannot do this anymore, but I don't know what to do." I didn't know about AA. I didn't know, if to go 2 days without a drink was like, I haven't got a problem. And
defeated feeling.
And I could not physically or mentally stop drinking, and I was just a wreck. You know, I was bloated. I was, I didn't even like looking in the mirror because it was always my eyes were always bloodshot, and anyway, it was crazy. And anyway, he said this to me, and I was sitting there on my couch, and I says, "You know, I need help, but I don't know how to get help." I was just talking to him, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was a doctor, and a country doctor, and he was ringing up about my youngest son's bedwetting, and I blurted out to them that I've got an alcohol problem, and I don't know what to do. He says, "Come and see me right now." So in my car, I go up and see this doctor, and we chatted for about an hour, and he had worked in Queen Mary Hamner Hospital as a locum, and
so he'd been working with alcoholics.
He had, and
for our listeners that don't know, Hamner was where they used to run a rehab, part of the hospital up there, and it's quite a few of our people in the fellowship have been there, but of course they closed it.
They did close it
a long time ago.
I think that was
now
the craziest thing they could have ever done, but and it was world known.
It was
Queen Mary in Hamner, and you had the hot pools, and it was great. And but anyway, this doctor through the A&D clinic, and that had me in Hamner within a week. And 7 days it was. My mum came up and picked my boys up, and off I went. And gosh, it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. I did my 5 weeks there, and home I came. And I feared coming home, because where I was safe. There was other people like me, and I didn't want to leave there. I didn't want to come back to the big ugly world, because I was scared I was going to drink. I was scared what's out there. And I remember my counsellor saying to me, the day I left, you go home and you go straight to a meeting, which I did. It was the Friday night Nellie Nightingale in Nelson, and off I went and met my first sponsor, who today is my sponsor, and we've sacked each other over the last 25 years, but I love her to bits, and she's I think she's got 37 years sobriety and beautiful woman.
And a little guardian angel that you never thought you were going to have.
Absolutely.
The friendship that you create with your sponsor over time.
Yep. She's
so understanding.
She puts her sponsor hat on, when she's, and takes it off when she's my mate. It's fantastic. I talk to her 2 or 3 times a week, sometimes 4 hours on the phone. We talk about all sorts of stuff, and sponsor is so important. Sponsors, it's just such an important part of recovery. And so I stopped the drinking, and I came home, and I got on with my life, and I made sure I attended regular meetings. I got into service, which is really important, and at the time I didn't realise that boy that told me to give up drinking was already on his own path of drinking and drugging. And when I was 7 years sober, that boy died.
Oh gosh.
That boy died, and he was an alcoholic.
You're listening to AA Live on ORFM Dunedin.
Welcome back. We're going to head into a bit of a song, actually. We'll take a wee break here. And we're going to listen to some another one of my son's favourites, but you can't recognise this person, Dua Lipa.
After midnight, me and my thoughts alone. Tells me don't, 'cause I'm no good at giving up control. Are you worried that I might find something wrong? 'Cause I'm worried that I won't. But if control is my religion, then I'm headed for collision. That's my shut up.
Good, wasn't it? I had my toes tapping. Right, we're going to return to Tanya's story, part two, as they say. So enjoy.
My son was 20 years old and when he died, and he was a drug addict, alcoholic, and I tried to get him to the rooms, you know, to recovery, and he always says, oh, one day, Mum, I'll do it. And the funny thing is, I always knew that I would outlive that one. And so when the police and that came to tell me that he had died, you know, my world fell apart. And but you know what, I never thought about having a drink. All I knew was to go to a meeting, talk to my sponsor, and, you know, do the steps. That's all I knew, and that's all I did, you know. And I remember we brought him home, and he stayed at my house for a few days before he had his funeral. And you know, I remember the day that they brought his casket home, and he was coming in one door, and I says, you know, hi, Chris. And I'm walking out the other door because I got a meeting to go to.
You go to a meeting.
I got to go to a meeting. Mm. And because that kept me okay. And, you know, it's funny. It's only till this year that I've thought, you know, that boy really was a catalyst of me getting into recovery, you know. Mm. 25 years ago, if it wasn't for him to say to me that night, Mummy, if you don't stop drinking, I'm beep out of here. Mm. maybe it would never have happened. I don't know, but I it took me a lot of years to work. Oh my goodness, he was my catalyst to get into recovery, and then he gets into it and he dies.
Yeah.
And and I can't change that. And I've learnt so much from him and his passing. And today, you know, I'm back in Dunedin. I'm back in Dunedin after a failed relationship, and which was meant to happen. And it's all about growth again. You know, not only when I came into recovery did I think that it was just the alcohol that was my problem. I had life problems. I had sex problems. I had all sorts of problems going on in my life. Money, you name it, I had it. Yeah. And I just thought it was alcohol, and it certainly wasn't. And childhood problems. There was just so many things that I had to work through and still working through. You know, it's
trauma sticks.
Yes. And it's a lifelong thing. But as long as I do meetings, talk to my sponsor, do the steps, talk to other alcoholics, help other alcoholics, my life is bloody good.
Yeah. It is. I agree.
I have got a good life today, you know?
Yeah. I have a life like that too. I didn't ever think it could be this. Easy's not the word, but because I can manage life these days. I never thought my life would be so manageable and have so much. There's times where it's pure joy.
It is.
And I look at my child and I go, wow. And I hear you've got your grandchildren in your life.
I have my daughter who I gave to my mother. Mm-hmm. She's 44 and we are the best of friends. And she has her three daughters, you know. And
you get to have them in your life.
They are in my life. And so my living amends is my grandchildren. You know, I can do for my grandchildren what I couldn't do for my own children. Mm. And they are a joy. They are just the most beautiful little girls. And I'm picking them up from school today. I'm taking them to their swimming lesson. And I can do that. Mm. And it help my daughter and her husband through their trials of life. Mm. And my of course, my first son, he's gone, but my second son, he lives in Sydney. He's doing very well for himself, and he dabbled but got through the other side, and he doesn't dabble anymore. So, you know, I pray these little girls will grow up. But, you know, it's just, again, it's that living amends and being, you know, their parents aren't drinkers, so, you know, who knows, you know,
well,
what the future holds.
It's that thing, isn't it? You make a change and... Like you've said living amends a few times now, which I really appreciate our listeners hearing, because if we change our lifestyles, all behaviours are learned behaviours.
Of course it is.
And
of course it
so,
is.
You know, your children have seen what it can do. Your grandchildren will see a life that doesn't involve alcohol and violence.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a learned behaviour, and it's learning self-respect for oneself as well.
And it's also, for me, it's like these little girls, one's coming 12, one's coming 9, and one's 5, and the two older ones, they know that Nani goes to AA meetings because she can't drink alcohol. They're very aware of it, very open.
Well, it's a disease that, for some reason, I suppose we were talking earlier, you know, in the 60s and 70s, things weren't talked about. Now, you know, here we are in 2024. I don't know about you, but I'm quite open about the disease of alcoholism. And I think society would do well to talk about it more and to recognise it.
I do. Mm. I'm not ashamed.
Well, that's partly why we're here, sitting here today.
I'm not ashamed to say I'm an alcoholic. And we've all got our own stories. Mm. And if it can help just one person, why wouldn't you share it?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know, and today, you know, I'm coming up 26 years in sobriety and I'm still learning. I'm still, you know, I've got a lot of learning. It's a journey. It's never going to be a destination. And to the day I die.
Well, it turns out life is a journey. I never knew that.
Yeah, life is
life is a journey. Yeah. And what is that other saying, living life on life's terms?
Yeah.
I never ever thought that life was living on any sort of term. Except
my terms.
Mine.
My terms.
Turns out that I've got to understand the world in general to be able to live in it. Mm. It's amazing.
I look at today, I can, and for a long time now, I can look at the beauty of the world. You know, I go for take my 90-year-old mum for drives, you know, and she's not an alcoholic, but she should have a meeting. And she teaches me, she's my teacher for tolerance and patience, I tell you. But I take her for drives all over the place. And I, you know, I used to be so closed off. It was just focused on me and my drinking and my this, that and everything. I look at the beauty. I look at the hills. I look at the trees. I look at stuff, you know, and I see
there's
the
so
beauty.
Much simple beauty in
yes,
this world.
Yes, absolutely.
It doesn't have to be as complicated as we made it when we were drinking.
And I have compassion for people.
Absolutely.
You know, and yes, I can still be a judgmental person. I've got all those things in me. I can. And but boy, I'm not like I used to be, you know, and I pull myself up these days, you know, when I'm doing something that I shouldn't be doing, you know, I know it, I feel it in my soul, you know, and it hurts, and I need to do something about it, you know, and I'm on step 8 again at the moment, and oh, there's my amends list, and really, yes, do it, I don't want to, you know. The steps, so incredibly important in your life, sponsorship, so incredibly important, and having compassion for other people and love, just love, you know. You don't have to like everybody.
Hey, my sponsor has loved me back to wellness.
Yeah, and same.
And so have the medical people around me and all those sorts of things. And, what's it, one of our people in the fellowship, Kevin, always says, a grateful alcoholic doesn't drink.
Yeah.
And I'm so incredibly grateful for
I am grateful. Mm. I am such a grateful alcoholic today, and I'm not ashamed to say I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah. Removing that shame. Huge. Oh, gosh, I'm so lucky to have spent this time with you today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and it's been great. Oh,
no, you put yourself forward, and I really appreciate it. I think for our listeners out there, this woman is a wonderful person for us to have in the fellowship. You know, I've never met so many people in a room that can change another person's life just by being them and freely giving themselves. So, yeah, thank you so much for today.
You're more than welcome, and thank you very much for listening to me.
I hope you all enjoyed that story this evening. I certainly enjoyed catching up with her, so thank you very much, Tanya. I wanted to talk a little bit about AA tonight and how it works, AA being Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got a few things that I just thought, these are questions that get asked, like what is Alcoholics Anonymous? What is AA? So it's a voluntary worldwide fellowship of men and women from all walks of life. We meet together to attain and maintain sobriety. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So, you know, there's no dues, and there's no fees for AA membership. If you think you may have a problem, come to a meeting and check it out. How is AA supported? Well, I tell you what, we're self-supporting. So what happens, we don't seek or accept contributions from non-members. We literally have a tradition that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. That is our seventh tradition. So what happens is when you go into a meeting, sometimes they'll pass around a cup or a bag or something like that. And you might throw in 10 cents, you might throw in $2, you might throw in nothing. There's no fees. And that pays for the room hire and for the coffee and tea and if you're lucky, some biscuits. So, yeah, there's nobody outside that helps us financially. Why Alcoholics Anonymous is anonymous. This is it's a spiritual foundation of AA. It disciplines the fellowship to govern itself by principles rather than personalities. So we are a society of peers, basically. We strive to make known our program of recovery, not individuals who participate in a program. So it's all about people helping people. Anonymity in the public media, that's a definite assurance to all AAs, especially to newcomers, that your AA membership will not be disclosed. You know, we leave a meeting, we certainly don't talk about the meeting. We don't talk about who we've seen or what we've heard. That is said at every, that's part of our tradition as well. That's a tradition 12. So, yeah. We have meetings that are open and we have meetings that are closed. Now, open meetings, anyone can attend an open meeting of AA. You can bring a support person with you. You can bring a family member with you who maybe wants to learn about it and see what happens when you go in there. We have medical students come in at times as part of their curriculum to learn about addictions and what to maybe look for when we're going to the doctors and so forth. And how can you find an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, an AA meeting? Well, I tell you what, we've got a fantastic website here in New Zealand, which is aa.org.nz. If you're anywhere else in the world, look, aa.org will get you some details as well. So all meetings are always listed. Just throw that NZ on the back of it and you will be able to see where they are, what time they are, whether it's open, whether it's closed. It's full of information, tips on what could be helping you. I can't recommend the aa.org.nz website enough. It's got great things in it. It's got stories from people in it. It's, I've found it helpful. Let's put it that way. Look, only you can decide whether you want to give AA a try or whether you think it will help you. I must say for myself, when I first came into AA, I was 49 years old and I was desperate. I had reached a point where I needed something. I didn't know what I needed. It turned out I needed AA. But yeah, when I first came in, it was so welcoming. It was so warm. And there was not one bit of judgment in that room, which is possibly part of why I kept coming back, apart from the fact that I discovered I was an alcoholic. All that time beforehand, I'd run around thinking that I was not normal, but that I was going a little bit crazy. This disease is, it really does attack the brain. It attacks the brain to thinking you need more and more and more. But you don't want more. It's so bizarre. It's a little bit of insanity, I think. But that's what I found anyway. We do actually have a pamphlet that you can fill in. I think it's online as well, that you can ask yourself. There's several questions. You know, have you ever decided to stop drinking for a week or so but only lasted for a couple of days? You know, that's one of the questions. Do you envy people who can drink without getting into trouble? Or do you get into trouble? Have you ever switched from one kind of drink to another in the hope that it'll keep you from getting drunk? I certainly did that. Have you had problems with the police force, or, you know, you've got yourself into some trouble that just wasn't good? Have you caused trouble at home with your drinking? You know, do you look at your children and think, would I want them to be doing what I'm doing right now? You know, those are the sorts of things I ask myself. Do you ever think enough is never enough? I remember quite often, this would be on a regular basis for me, being out and seeing someone leave a drink on a table that hadn't been fully finished. And I would think that person was absolutely mad. What on earth were they doing? How could you leave a drink behind? Yeah, I was one of those people. I was always the last man standing, as they say. Have you missed days of work or school, or, you know, have you had blackouts? Yeah, I came into the rooms, I didn't think I had blackouts. Nope, not me. I fell asleep. I never had a blackout. Turned out my first drink was a blackout. There are parts of it I just cannot remember. Have you ever felt that if you didn't drink, your life could be better? Now, that's a big question. And I think for myself, I used to say, yes, it could be better, but then I would think, how do you possibly live without it? That was a big one for me. So I don't know how you do that. It was an impossibility in my head. AA was the only thing that has helped me put it down and be comfortable in my own skin and be comfortable with who I am and living my life today. So I could tell you, there are miracles in these rooms. I meet people all the time. So, yeah, don't hesitate to pop in. I tell you what I wanted to tell you also, we've got our 0800 AA Works phone line. That is 0800 229 6757. Give us a call. As I said, we are fully self-supporting. So people on the other end of that AA Works line, 0800 line, that's us. It's people with experience. As I said, there's no judgment. We just want to be there for you if you want it. So, yeah, 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757. And as I said earlier too, that aa.org.nz. Jump on that website if you feel like checking into it. We're going to finish with a song tonight. I have really enjoyed your company. Thank you very much for spending the evening with me. Take care out there. Be careful. Until next time, Mati Wai, everybody. Thank you.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.